One sheet, 13 lines. Written by Hope. Read by Opal Song. Fandom, the sleuth of the Ming Dynasty. Rating, explicit. Relationships, Sui Zhou, Tang Fan. Pei Huai, Tang Yu. Qingge, Jin San. Also tagged for slow burn. First time. Post-canon. Unreliable narrator. Resolved sexual tension. Hurt comfort. Womping. Angst. Misunderstandings. PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder. Case fic. Canon trans character. Happy ending. Tang Fan is a hot mess. Sui Zhou is soft. And getting together. Part 1 of the One Sheet, 13 Lines series. Warning. Re the PTSD tag. There isn't a lot of trauma detail here, just depictions of PTSD symptoms, such as flashbacks, nightmares, and psychological responses to triggers. Chapter 1. Without hardships and pains, a person's thoughts will not be far-reaching, and his interests will not be broad. Xun Kuang, Confucian philosopher. In the last afternoon light, Tang Fan works through the mending. It's been piling up since they returned from the case in Pei Huai's hometown. Wear and tear on clothes that had been worn through the end of the wet summer season, and more of Sui Zhou's uniform garments damaged through fighting. Deng Er should really be helping, but Tang Fan can't bring himself to interrupt her quiet reading as she works through the latest volume of poetry he's assigned her to study. It's quiet, except for the soft whisper of her turning pages, and the snip of Tang Fan's scissors, so they both look up as the gate creaks open. Sui Zhou, Tang Fan calls immediately. I have been mending these for hours now. Could you perhaps try to get stabbed less? He tosses down the torn dark blue fabric in his hands, mouth pursed. The hint of a smile twitches on Sui Zhou's lips as he steps into the house. He glances at the pile of clothing next to the sewing basket. No need to mend Dong Ar's, he says. She's outgrown them. We'll buy some more. Sui Dage! Deng Er's eyes light up and she shoots upright in her seat. Tomorrow? Sui Zhou hums in assent, his smile towards her more open. Deng Er is spoiled while Tang Fan is left with menial labor. Tang Fan pouts, slumping his shoulders a little. It's not being spoilt to have suitable clothing, Sui Zhou responds in mild admonishment, with a look that Tang Fan has come to recognize as amusement. Here. He tucks his hand under his belt and retrieves a small, flat parcel, wrapped in oilskin, holds it out to Tang Fan. Via Imperial Courier. Tang Fan perks up, taking the parcel eagerly as curiosity pushes aside the urge to tease Sui Zhou with his usual banter. He unwraps the oilskin swiftly. Inside is a letter with Sui Zhou's name inscribed on the cover in familiar calligraphy. "From Wangshi?" Tang Fan exclaims, opening the folded paper and running his eyes over the script eagerly. "It's encoded! It must be a sensitive case!" Deng Er has left her seat to peer over his shoulder at the seemingly random characters, and Tang Fan adjusts his hold to let her see more clearly. "I'm gonna go get changed and start dinner," Sui Zhou says, meeting Tang Fan's eyes as he briefly glances up. "Don't put too much effort into it. We might have to leave before you're done," Tang Fan calls distractedly after him, the characters on the page already spinning up and around him as he shuffles their orders and meanings. By the time Sui Zhou is setting the table, Deng Er has decoded the letter. Tang Fan is only a little disappointed. He's come to accept Deng Er's brilliance and enjoy its benefits rather than wasting any more time on feelings of resentment. Wang Dage says it's very cold in Hetao, and that he has had to work more on his horsemanship than he ever had to in the capital. He also says that there is a lamb dish he thinks Tang Dage would enjoy, and has asked the chef to write down the recipe for Sui Dage. He asks if Tang Dage has paid off his debt to Donggu with his new salary, or if he is still expecting Sui Dage to cover all his expenses. Tang Fan scowls at Deng Er's stream of words. "Since when is he Wang Dage?" he asks, incredulous. "Since he said so. See?" Deng Er points to a handful of characters that say something about radishes hunting perfume beneath a hawk moon. "Tell Deng Er that Wang Dage has yet to find a Go opponent that can live up to her skill," she recites. Tang Fan frowns. He had guessed that radish might refer to Wangshi, but got no further. "Sit," Sui Zhou says gently as he sets the last plate on the table, and Deng Er carefully folds the letter and puts it aside before taking her place. Sui Zhou has not taken his advice to put less effort into the meal. Tang Fan observes, eyeing each dish with relish as Sui Zhou starts moving portions from the steaming plates into their bowls. Tang Fan's stomach is impatient, twisting with hunger as he watches Sui Zhou place the best pieces of meat in front of him. "Eat." For a moment, there's only the sounds of clicking chopsticks against ceramic as they all begin to eat. Tang Fan can't keep quiet for long, though. "It must be a double layer of code," he says through a mouthful of pork. "He's trying to tell us about the case through a carefully constructed narrative of mundanity. Or he is our friend who is writing to us about his life because he misses us," Deng Er retorts. Tang Fan scoffs. "Wangshi?"
"You said it yourself," Sui Zhou says, tone equanimous. "He has changed."
Tang Fan had told Wangshi that he had become soft-hearted. He remembered the moment. He had been teasing, but had also felt proud of his friend. He feels chastened now. "Well, if he expects us to write back, he will have to be able to decode a far more difficult cipher than that one," he says, rallying. "I'll work on it," Deng Er agrees excitedly.
"What shall we tell him?"
Sui Zhou asks. Deng Er's eyes are gleaming with excitement at the task. "That it's starting to get cold here as well, and we hope he brought some warm clothes with him. That Donggu is trying a new dish on her menu, but it really only became popular when Sui Dage suggested adding ginger to it. Oh, that Sui Dage and Shui Doren are catching a lot more criminals now that Wan Dugong has been banished from the capital. That Tang Ai and Pei Daifu are going to get married."
"What about poor Tang Fan?" Tang Fan demands. "I have been working on important cases for the emperor."
Deng Er shrugs, not even looking up from her food. "Wang Dage probably already knows everything that you're doing." She stuffs more noodles in her mouth. Tang Fan can't argue with her. "Well, you can tell him that it was me who invested in the imported ingredients for Donggu's new dishes." She nods. "I will tell him about the ingredients Pei Daifu found."
"You!"
Tang Fan jabs his chopsticks in her direction.
and Sui Zhou uses his own to push them back down to the table without even looking up from his bowl. "You can tell him I've finished my latest book," Tong Fan says primly. Deng Er nods. "He asked me to send him a copy before he even left. It can be delivered with our letter." Tong Fan scowls, poking at his food with his chopsticks. "Deng Er is cruel to me." Sui Zhou places another piece of meat in Tong Fan's bowl. "Tong Fan has harvested a full crop of wolf peaches from our garden this summer," he says in his soft, warm voice, glancing at Deng Er. "Mmm," Deng Er nods.
"Tomatoes,"
Tong Fan corrects, trying for sullen, but finding it difficult while smiling.
"I think Wang Daga would prefer wolf peaches," Deng Er says thoughtfully. And Tong Fan agrees.
The latest task given to him by the Emperor is to vet another candidate being considered for the Ministry of War. So Tong Fan is up late into the night, reading through decades of records, slips of paper tucked into books behind him with relevant dates and references written on them. Deng Er had brought him lunch hours ago, as well as another layer in the basket with snacks to keep him until dinner. But dinner time has long since passed when he finishes for the night. A yawn cracks his jaw, and he presses the heels of his palms into his dry, gritty eyes. Pan Bin had left him to it long ago, and darkness presses in through the windows. He lights a lantern to see his way home, his feet following automatically as he watches the warm orb of it sway in front of him. When he arrives in their courtyard, he sees a soft light in his own rooms, and another in the kitchen. With any luck, it means Deng Er has left a plate for him. Tong Fan goes to his own rooms first, lifting the futou from his head and setting it on the table by the door before picking at his braided hair and unraveling it, his eyes closed as the relief washes over his scalp. Combing his fingers through it to straighten it as it falls down his back, he walks towards the chest where he keeps his sleeping clothes, only to stop short. There's something on top of it, another item of clothing, folding and sitting up plumply, fabric thick. He leans down to peer at it in the dim light, then runs his hand over it before picking it up. It's a cloak. Soft and bone white, made of thick, finely woven wool with a smooth lining. The borders of it are embroidered thickly with leaves and flowers, weaving in a geometric vine in strands of pale gold silk. Tong Fan blinks at it for long moments, hands moving over it. The warm, slight roughness of the wool and the cool slickness of the silk. Then he shakes his head, folding the cloak carefully back onto the chest, and finishes unbuckling his belt. He shrugs off his official robes before picking up his chopsticks and padding silently across the courtyard to where the light glows faintly in their dining room. Sui Zhou looks up from where he's reading at the table when Tong Fan opens the door, and Tong Fan almost falls back out of the room, heart leaping in his throat. He hadn't expected anyone else to be up this late.
"Guangchan, are you trying to kill me?" he hisses, hand clutching his chest.
Sui Zhou's eyes dart over him, taking in his state of part undress. Then, without a word, closes his book and sets it aside, reaching instead to lift the lid on the small stove on the table. A heavenly smell wafts out on a cloud of steam, and Tong Fan collapses onto a stool and leans towards it, as Sui Zhou ladles out a full bowl of soup, noodles and tofu swimming in the cloudy broth.
"Ah, Guangchuan Xiong, I forgive you,"
Tong Fan says reverently, and sets his chopsticks down in favor of the spoon Sui Zhou offers him. Tong Fan is halfway through the bowl, feeling more warm and awake than he has for hours before he thinks to ask. "Sui Zhou, why are you still awake? Are you working on a case?" He glances at the book, but Sui Zhou has placed it cover down.
"I didn't know if you had eaten,"
Sui Zhou says, watching Tong Fan attempt to slurp and chew at the same time. Ah, of course, you can't leave the stove unattended after all, Tong Fan observes, chasing the last of the noodles around the bottom of his bowl with the blunt snout of his spoon.
Did Dong Ar buy new clothes today? He asked after a moment.
Sui Zhou nods. Some more boots and underclothes. We ordered some winter robes as well, to collect in a week.
I forget that children grow all the time, Tong Fan says, distracted then. Did she pick out the cloak as well?
Sui Zhou drops his gaze, expression unreadable. You need warmer clothes for winter as well, he says, which isn't an answer to Tong Fan's question.
Tong Fan swallows down the urge to pick at it.
Thank you, he says instead.
Then, mulishly, I am not a sixth-ranked official anymore, you know. I can afford fine things on my own.
Sui Zhou is looking at him again. You don't have to.
Tong Fan feels he is teetering on the edge of a moment, like Sui Zhou is already in it and waiting for him to make the leap. After getting so used to the feeling of Sui Zhou at his side, it's an uncomfortable sensation to feel this strange mismatch. Tong Fan doesn't like not understanding things. He pushes the feeling aside and sets down his bowl.
Will you make scallion pancakes for breakfast tomorrow?
Sui Zhou nods. He looks tired, for all that his mouth is tilted in an uncomplicated smile. And Tong Fan remembers how late it is.
You had better go to bed so you can get up in time to make them, he suggests,
standing again and stretching until his neck cracks, feeling each vertebrae separate in the arch of his spine. Sui Zhou is looking up at him, and he nods.
Good night, Runqing, he says once he's standing,
voice soft as the golden candlelight.
Good night, and don't forget, scallions!
Sui Zhou doesn't turn back, and Tong Fan spends a little longer banking the embers of the small stove, enjoying the warmth of it, before heading back to his own rooms. Autumn has well and truly tipped down the slope towards winter, when the next letter from Wang Zhi arrives. The clouds above threaten snow more days than not, sometimes releasing just enough to last overnight.
He Tao is an outpost on the border,
Sui Zhou says, brow furrowed, when Dong Ar and Tong Fan both complain at length of the time they had to wait.
And you know Wang Zhi wouldn't take advantage of military resources for personal reasons.
The cipher this time is more difficult, too. Sui Zhou insists they eat first, and Dong Ar retreats to her room to work on it afterwards, leaving Tong Fan, Tong Yu, Pei Huai, and Sui Zhou to sip wine and enjoy the heat of the braziers long into the evening, talking about the upcoming wedding plans.
They love Tong Yu almost as much as I do, Pei Huai is saying, not for the first time that evening.
Wine has made the tops of his cheeks ruddy. Tong Fan watches his sister from under his lashes. As much as she adores Pei Huai in return, he knows she still feels keenly that her status as a divorcee makes her less of a match for him. She smiles at him now, a little too tightly, and Tong Fan silently approves as Pei Huai takes her hand and cradles it in both of his.
My parents were not disappointed when I became a doctor instead of a local official, nor when I moved to the city. Of course they are not disappointed by my incredible luck in love.
Second sons have it better, right, Guang Chuan?
Tong Fan interjects, keen to lighten the mood, just as much as he is, to ease Tong Yu's mind. The warmth of the wine spreading out from his throat makes him feel like they're all bundled tightly together in the orange light of the lamps. Sui Zhou says, downing his cup in one gulp. He's not a loud drunk, like Tong Fan, or an earnest one like Pei Huai. In fact, it's hard to notice when he's drunk at all, except he has been known to break his usual reserve to spit out absolutely devastating truths. This time is no exception, it seems.
It's difficult to be disappointing when there are no expectations of you to begin with.
Tongfan nearly falls off his chair, reeling himself back in with his grip on the edge of the table. Sui Guangchuan, but you are such an obedient son.
I was,
Sui Zhou says in a flat, inscrutable tone, which for some reason has Pei Huai slapping the table and barking out a laugh.
Some things work out better than we expected, despite our family's best intentions, Tang Yu says kindly, smiling at Tang Fan.
Tang Fan smiles back and turns to Sui Zhou again.
Jia is right. Look at you, Guangchuan. You're a kung fu master, a high-ranking official of the Northern Imperial Guard, and hold the personal favor of His Majesty.
Tang Fan waves his loosely clasped hands towards the direction of the Forbidden Palace, bobbing his head.
Sui Zhou agrees. And I live with Dong Ar and Tang Fan.
Tang Fan feels himself straighten up with pride, chest puffing out. He wobbles a little on his stool.
Exactly. The only achievement that could surpass it would be to take a suitable wife.
Sui Zhou's mouth twists, and the look he gives Tang Fan is familiar. Though old, an abrupt confusion. Tang Fan giggles.
Forgive this humble one, but the Empress Dowager does not know you well enough to make a proper love match. I wonder if Wang Zhe knows of anyone suitable. I would offer to find you someone, but the lowly Tang family moves in different circles.
Sui Zhou's expression shifts again, and he looks down at the table in front of him instead of responding. The mood around the table has gone from warm to tepid, and Tang Fan isn't quite sure how they ended up here. It must have something to do with the wine sloshing in his belly, the lanterns making the air around them feel hazy. He presses his hand to his sternum, trying to push the rising discomfort back down.
Tang Fan, Pei Huai says, and the way he says it sounds like reproach.
Ayao Lao Pei,
Tang Fan swats the air toward him.
Not everyone can have their perfect lover delivered to them in a swoop of brilliance.
Sui Zhou is twisting the wine cup between his fingers. After a moment, he looks up and gives Tang Fan a tight smile before reaching for the wine jar again.
Guangchuan, Runqing,
Tang Yu interrupts. I think it's time you went to bed. She is suddenly next to him, and she slips an arm around his waist and hoists him to standing. Maybe he is drunker than he realized. Her warmth at his side and the jasmine scent of her hair is nice, though.
Guangchuan,
Tang Fan shouts back over her shoulder.
Dough sticks and soy milk for breakfast tomorrow. Wake me up early before they're sold out.
Sui Zhou doesn't have time to respond before Tang Yu closes the door firmly behind them, and then they are in the bracing cold of the courtyard, seizing Tang Fan's lungs into a stuttering laugh of surprise on his first inhale. Their feet scuff through the powdered sugar layer of snow over the stones, and Tang Fan leans more heavily into Tang Yu just to feel the strength of her holding him up.
Ah, Jia Jia, I'm not a child anymore. You don't need to put me to bed.
Quiet, you silly boy, she says shortly, and Tang Fan smarts. He frowns.
Why is Jia Jia being so mean to me?
She guides them through the door and manages to close it behind them before pushing Tang Fan onto the bed. It's not quite as warm in here as it was in their dining room, but Sui Zhou lit the single brazier hours ago, so he'll be able to sleep comfortably.
Enough, Runqing,
Tang Yu says, and Tang Fan pouts at her.
Sometimes you are too cruel.
Tang Fan gapes.
Me? Cruel? You are the one who pulled me out of that nice warm room with our friends and threw me into the snow like a beggar.
Tang Fan,
a beggar, Jia?
Tang Yu rolls her eyes and yanks his boots off before shoving his legs onto the bed.
I bet you never make that face at Lao Pei,
Tang Fan challenges. Tang Yu huffs, withdrawing a little.
He never deserves it. Jia Jia,
Tang Fan moans, grasping her hand and pulling her down. She sighs and concedes to sit on the edge of the bed.
I feel sick.
She sighs again, softer, and Tong Fan's eyes flutter closed as her cool hand begins stroking his forehead.
Mmm,
he hums.
Jia Jia.
He's almost asleep. Along with the sound of the brazier crackling faintly, he can hear muffled murmurs of speech through the walls, Pei Huai's familiar cadence, and Tang Yu's quiet breathing.
Run Qing,
she says softly into the long silence.
Hmm?
Why are you so mean to Guang Chuan? Tang Fan frowns. His eyes are stuck closed. Her hand keeps stroking. He rolls toward her and groans, curling up like a prawn.
He likes it.
Tang Yu's hand slips back into his hair, then grips and tugs his ear, making him yowl in half-hearted displeasure.
Not like that, she counters.
Tang Fan makes himself open his eyes. He sits up, the room seeming to take a moment to catch up. He and Sui Zhou have developed, over the years, a push and pull, a back and forth, an easy and exhilarating balance. But it hadn't always been that way. Tang Fan can't easily forget the anxiety of their first days living together. It was clear Sui Zhou thought Tang Fan was asking for bribes to complete the Han case. But Sui Zhou's easy capitulation had only made Tang Fan more concerned. Once Tang Fan solved the case for him, Sui Zhou would hold all the power in their dynamic, and Tang Fan's concern as to how that could play out had doubled as soon as Dong Er had been delivered into his responsibility. Sui Zhou had family in the Forbidden Palace. Tang Fan's desire to take apart those corrupt courts from the inside had turned into dust alongside the drunken hometown restaurant years ago. If he pushed Sui Zhou hard enough, Tang Fan's reasoning had been he would be sure to show his true colors. And Sui Zhou had shown his true colors. Despite Tang Fan's best efforts to elicit a rejection, and even after Tang Fan had solved the Han case for him, he had let Tang Fan and Dong Er stay.
He will need to marry,
Tang Fan mumbles. The wine is acid in his belly, mixing unpleasantly with the meal Sui Zhou had served them hours ago.
I will make sure he has someone to take care of him. Someone who loves him.
He presses his face into his sister's shoulder, heart aching at his past mistakes.
Jia Jia, I won't get it wrong this time and send him to Tong Zhou.
Tang Yu uses the arm around him to twist his ear again.
Run Qing, you silly boy,
she says, much softer this time.
Not silly. Number one scholar,
Tang Fan mumbles petulantly in response. Tang Yu sighs, then helps him lie down again and tucks him into bed.
Jia,
he mumbles as she finally turns to go, open door in her hand. She looks back over her shoulder at him.
Will you still love me after you're married?
She should roll her eyes again, but she doesn't. Her smile seems sad, but then the light is very dim.
Always, Run Qing,
she says, and closes the door gently behind her.
Tang Daga!
Tang Fan groans as Dong Er's voice pierces the blankets pulled up around his ears.
Dong Er,
he drawls miserably.
Why?
Sui Daga says it's time for dough sticks and soy milk, she says, and I finished decoding Wang Daga's letter. Tang Fan pushes the blankets off his face and squints in the cold morning light. His mouth tastes like something died in it. Perhaps Dong Er could just bring him the dough sticks.
What did he say this time?
Dong Er makes a tiny humph sound, and Tang Fan peers in her direction. She has her chin tilted up, stubbornly.
I won't tell you until you get out of bed.
She has learnt his cunning, and Tang Fan can't fault her for it. You need to find other ways of getting what you want when you can't be a kung fu master or an expert swordsman. Within the length of a joss stick, he's dressed and waiting in the courtyard, the new cloak thrown over his shoulders. It's heavier than anything else he's ever worn, and even as his breath clouds in the air, he feels comfortably warm. The last thin layer of snow crunches faintly behind him, and he turns around to see Sui Jo stepping down the stairs into the courtyard. He's wearing his uniform, embroidery like filigreed ice on his shoulders, and he doesn't speak, just looks at Tong Fan silently. Tong Fan's hangover is only mild, but it's persistent, a twinge in his temples and a twist in his gut. "Guang Chuan," he scowls. "Why do you stare?" He breaks eye contact uncomfortably. Sui Jo walks forward to stand at his side. "It suits you," he says, nodding at the cloak. It sounds less like a compliment and more like a confirmation. Tong Fan wraps the cloak around himself more tightly and gives a brief shiver. "Deng Er," he yells. "Did you wake me up for nothing?" Deng Er skips down the steps from her room, her own forget-me-not blue cloak flying out behind her as she jumps into the courtyard. "Let's go!" She chatters as they walk, relaying Wang Shi's letter from memory, and Tong Fan finds himself relaxing. As chilly as the morning air is, the melted snow makes the streets look washed dark and clean. This early, they are some of the few people out as street vendors set up their stalls. The usual sound of the city has not yet reached its daily peak, and the rare, piercing blue of the sky above makes Sui Jo's uniform seem starkly vibrant. It's quiet enough that they can walk three abreast through the streets, and Tong Fan looks over the top of Deng Er's head to find Sui Jo smiling back at him. Abruptly and from nowhere, Tong Fan has the strange urge to reach out and grasp Sui Jo's hand. His fingers twitch into a fist. He really is much warmer than he ever has been at this time of year. If anything, perhaps a little too warm with the exertion of walking to the other side of the city. And, "Guang Chuan, do you have a case in this neighborhood?"
"No."
"Then why are you walking so far away from the Northern Imperial Guard? It will take more than an hour to walk back."
"I'm buying dough sticks and soy milk for breakfast. They are the best in the city."
Tong Fan huffs out a white cloud of exasperation. "What do you think Wang Daga meant?" Distracted, Tong Fan turns to where Deng Er is looking up at him expectantly. He's missed the last passages of Wang Shi's letter, her chatter fading into the background of his thoughts. "He thanked Tong Daga for his gift and said he hadn't anticipated needing it, but may have cause to use it again in the future, so he is glad he brought it with him." Tong Fan frowns. They had sent a letter in return for the previous one Wang Shi had sent, not gifts. And he hadn't gifted Wang Shi anything during the years they had worked together. Unless he counted the bowls of noodles Wang Shi had stolen right from under his nose. "Wang Zhifu is trying to tell us something after all," he muses, pleased despite the potential danger the secrecy infers. "In two layers of code."
"What gift is he referring to?"
Sui Jo asks with some concern. Tong Fan doesn't like to admit he doesn't know, so he walks in silence for a time, searching his mind. Not even Deng Er, with her impeccable recall, is speaking up, so it must be something only Tong Fan remembers. He tries to place himself in his memories, reenact them mentally, in his mind's eye, holding something, handing it to Wang Shi. "The wisdom pouch!" Tong Fan exclaims. "I gave it to him to open when he was trapped with the Emperor in Huanyi brothel."
"What was the message?"
Even though it was Yang Fu who died in Wang Shi's place, Tong Fan's throat closes as he remembers the guilt he felt seeing the body on the front steps of the brothel. Having told Wang Shi to hold on and wait for them, he'd been so naive to not realize how far up into the official ranks the rebellion went. "It was to wait for us, that we were coming to help."
"He wants us to come, then. Is he in danger?"
Sui Jo asks. "The letter isn't asking us to come as such. It's almost like he's telling us we should be ready. There would be no question of it if he was. He has Jia Kui with him, after all. He can't be in the direst of situations.
They are a long way from home.
Sui Zhou's tone is somber. Tang Fan hums in agreement. The dough stick stall is just ahead of them, and he hangs back as Sui Zhou and Dong Er fetch food and some fresh soy milk, respectively. They eat at a small table set by the corner of a nearby building. The nuttiness of the milk and the sweet fluff of the warm dough make Tang Fan close his eyes in bliss.
Guang Chuan,
he says, after he's eaten too. Remember when I first bought you dough sticks and soy milk?
You bought food for Sui Daga?
Dong Er asks incredulously, eyes wide. Tang Fan nods, flicking his gaze to Sui Zhou briefly to gauge his expression. He seems to be absorbing the conversation with the same calm he always does. He enjoyed it so much he begged me to move into his house. Dong Er makes a small noise of intrigue.
And yet, Sui Daga has cooked for you every day since.
Tang Fan leans in conspiratorially.
They were really good dough sticks,
he says in a low voice, and winks. Dong Er grins even as she's chewing, and Tang Fan leans back, pleased.
I'm expected at the Imperial Guard,
Sui Zhou says, setting his bowl back down.
How do you propose we respond to Wangsha's letter?
Tang Fan swallows his mouth of soy milk. I don't think there's any urgency. I will compose a reply that indicates we understand, and then I think we should simply wait for the next message and ensure it never falls into the wrong hands.
Sui Zhou takes a deep breath and gives a brief nod.
Tang Fan takes another bite of his dough stick. Lamb for dinner? He asks through his mouthful. Sui Zhou nods towards Dong Er.
Do you have enough silver to go to the market?
Dong Er nods, mouth still full. Sui Zhou brushes his hands off and stands.
I will see you both this evening. Dong Er, will you marinate the lamb like I showed you?
Yes, Sui Daga.
Sui Zhou smiles in approval, then rests his hand on Tang Fan's shoulder for an instant before he turns and strides away with his usual easy lope. Hand on his sword. Tang Fan looks after him for a moment, then turns back to Dong Er. So what else did Wang Daga say? Dong Er rolls her eyes, but begins reciting Wangsha's letter from the start again. The next month, Tang Fan and Dong Er travel to Pei Huai's hometown for Tang Yu's wedding. Wu Yun accompanies them. With Sui Zhou overseeing more of the Imperial Guard now, he has less freedom to leave the capital. Besides, they'd agreed that if Sui Zhou was around, any letter from Wangshu could be received immediately, away from any potentially prying eyes. The carriage is loaded up with all their fine clothes and gifts, so the three of them sit up front. A tight squeeze, certainly, but better than one of them sitting alone.
Tang Daga, what was Tang Ai's first wedding like?
Tang Fan gives an exaggerated yawn. Boring, he huffs. I was younger than you. There were no other children to play with. He would rather not tell her the reality of it. That, while it hadn't exactly been enjoyable, Tang Fan had been far from bored. Tang Yu had married as soon as she was old enough. Both she and Tang Fan anxious that the He family might not honor the agreement made with their parents years before. It had been 4 years since their parents' death, when Tang Yu gave her 3 bows. Tang Fan was 13, and at least 2 years younger. As a parentless child, he was possibly the lowest status guest at the wedding, and was treated as such. It was the last time he would see his sister, before the other arrangements their parents had made transpired and he left for the Hanlin Academy.
I'm grateful that Tang Ai got married before, because even though the He family is despicable, it means we have Chang Er.
Dong Er muses. Tang Fan swats at her half-heartedly.
You can't be so rude when we're at the Pei family home, shameless girl.
Dong Er shrugs, making bemused eyes at Tang Fan as she nibbles an osmanthus cake. Uyun, Tong Fan cries. Tell her!
Uyun gives an echoing shrug. Is she wrong?
Tong Fan throws his hands up in exasperation, outnumbered. Here, you're eating all the snacks before we're halfway out of the city. He pulls the basket off Dongar's lap and onto his own.
Sui Zhou had sent them off with enough food to get them there and back without taking a break from eating, and Tong Fan plucks out a fresh sesame cake, holding it between his teeth before offering the open basket to Wuyin. Wuyin takes a cake as well, ripping a piece off with his teeth and holding the reins in his other hand.
When is Sui Daga coming?
Dongar asks for at least the third time as they leave the walls of the city behind.
On the week of the wedding, Tong Fan tells her, also for the third time.
What if we miss him?
We won't have time to. There is a wedding to prepare for.
Sui Daga will miss us.
It's not even a question. Wuyin rumbles in agreement.
Tong Fan huffs. He won't have time. It's not easy being acting commander of the Imperial Guards. He had been outraged on Sui Zhou's behalf when he hadn't been assigned the commander role immediately after Wan Dugong was banished, at least until Sui Zhou had told him that he'd turned it down. Tong Fan was surprised by the relief he'd felt at that revelation.
Dongar makes a skeptical noise, reaching into the basket for another cake.
You don't get to see what he's like when you're not around.
Tong Fan frowns. There is a strange discomfort below his ribs, one that is not unfamiliar. The last time he'd felt it was after Duarla, around the time he and Sui Zhou had reconciled, and Tong Fan had moved back in again. The hints that Pei Huai and Dong Ar had dropped in conversation that Tong Fan couldn't quite interpret, that something in him shied away from trying to. He shoves an entire mung bean cake into his mouth and chews sullenly, nearly choking when he tries to swallow. Wuyin silently hands him a water flask. As they travel further away from the city, the number of other travelers they pass becomes fewer, and the landscape more varied. They pass along cliffsides, through woods, and over rolling hills. At the mouth of the long valley, with the Pei's hometown at its heart, they stop for a rest, and to see to the physical needs of their bodies. Tong Fan is emerging from the trees along the side of the road when he hears Dongar ask,
Uyun, what was Duarla Jia and Alasi's wedding like?
He nearly falls over, catching himself on a tree trunk at the last minute. He brushes down his robes and keeps walking towards them as he hears Uyun give a great hoot of laughter, a rare sound these days. And as Tong Fan steps back onto the road, Wuyin is chuckling.
You were lucky Aha never heard you say that.
Dongar gapes. They were unmarried lovers? She asks, with a mix of eagerness and curiosity. Wuyin shakes his head, still laughing. He gestures for Tong Fan to climb back onto the carriage ahead of him, and the three of them settle back into position. Uyin urges the horses on before answering. Dongar is wriggling with anticipation on the seat next to Tong Fan.
He was her sworn brother. The Dungar and Dorbet people fought together against the Ming in the war. Aha was the daughter of the Dorbet chief. When her family was killed in the war, she and her siblings were taken in by the Tsoros, the ruling clan. Alasi was Dungar. They were raised together.
So romantic, Dongar sighs.
Uyin chuckles again, glancing at her.
You've been reading too many of Tong Daren's novels.
Tong Fan gasps.
Wuyin, you read them? But they're anonymous.
Wuyin raises an eyebrow at him.
I didn't realize Tong Daren was trying to hide them.
He looks back ahead at the road.
I've never read them. Aha did.
Tong Fan howls in outrage. It's not that he's embarrassed. If he was, he would never have made it to a meeting with a publisher. It's that, well, it's like his sister reading them. The betrayal! Dong-ar, did you tell her? She found them when she was living with us. Tong-fan covers his face with his hands. Wu-Yin slaps a hand on his back in commiseration.
If it makes you feel better, she didn't take them very seriously.
Stop! Tong-fan groans. Dong-ar is giggling quietly. And even in his mortification, Tong-fan finds himself smiling as well. When he lowers his hands and glances to Wu-Yin, the man is still smirking. It's nice, these moments they can share, remembering Dwarla, learning new things about her. Tong-fan's heart still aches for his missing friend, but it helps to be with those who loved her as well. Tong-fan gets to spend more time with Tong-yu in preparation for her second wedding than he did for her first. The first time around, he was considered a child, put to the sidelines. This time he stands as Tong-yu's family. Lao Pei is going to serve tea to him. Dong-ar and Chong-ar keep each other well entertained, and Tong-fan is reminded, as he only is when he sees Dong-ar interact with other children, that she's still mostly a child herself, though 3 years older than he was when he left for Hanlin. Still, for all that Pei Huai's parents and siblings already treat the Tongs and Dong-ar as family, there is a certain distance and formality to their interactions, entwined with the traditions and ceremonies, that has Tong-fan on his best behavior, and therefore, frankly, missing home. It's another 2 days before Sui Zhou is due to arrive, and Tong-fan is hungry for his mince noodles every moment of every day. He hopes the Pei family will allow Sui Zhou to use their kitchen. Restless after another dinner with parents, siblings, and in-laws, Tong-fan finds himself leaving his own quarters once the rest of the household has settled down for the evening to head for Pei Huai's, a jar of wine in each hand. The valley is far south enough that the snow is yet to start falling here, but there's frost rimming every surface in the mornings, and it's still chilly. So Tong-fan hurries towards where the lantern light shines through lattice doors. The sound of voices brings him to a halt a few steps before he reaches the doors. After a moment, he recognizes his sisters along with Pei Huai's. Reluctant to interrupt, he hesitates and listens.
You used to pester him all the time about taking a wife. You don't think he's noticed you've stopped that?
Pei Huai's voice carries easily.
Pei Huai, he's my Didi. I'm sure the majority of my pestering goes in one ear and out the other. He probably hasn't been paying attention to it for years.
Tong-yu replies. The back of Tong-fan's neck prickles where he's frozen in place. He is interrupting, but the conversation is about him. Politeness dictates he should leave immediately or make his presence known, but ravenous curiosity wins out.
Still, he always gave me hints. He said he would never marry, that it wasn't for him. Perhaps I should have seen that for what it was, and actually shown him he could speak to me about it if he wanted.
Tong-yu again.
Xiao-yu, I'm telling you, he's not hiding from you. If anything, he's hiding from himself.
Tong-fan frowns, finds himself leaning closer towards the closed door. He wishes he could see their faces.
You are so convinced he would tell us if there was more between them?
Amidst his confusion, Tong-fan can't interpret the tones of his sister's voice. Is it wistfulness? Disappointment? Yes? You think he would be able to keep it a secret? From either of us?
For Sui Zhou's sake, maybe. Tong-fan seems dedicated to protecting his family's honor.
Tong-fan is getting very cold standing so still outside. The ceramic of the wine jars are like solid blocks of ice in his sweating hands, and his fingers and toes are tingling. Perhaps he's been holding his breath too long. Inside, Pei Huai sighs.
for all that your brother is intelligent, he still seems naive when it comes to matters of love.
The wine jar slips from Tongfan's fingers and he hisses as he fumbles, catching it just before it hits the paving stones. The voices inside fall silent, and Tongfan calls,
Ayao, Lao Pei, will you not even help me carry these?
He tries to arrange himself in a pose that indicates he's just arrived, and grins up at his sister as she opens the door.
Ah, Jia Jia, I didn't think you would be here. You should not be besmirching my Xiongdi's honor before you are even married.
Tang Yu huffs in amusement.
Hello, Ren Jing, she says, and steps aside to let him in. I was hoping we could enjoy a night of drinking while you are still a bachelor,
Tongfan says, holding up the wine jars and wiggling them at Pei Huai, who is sitting at a small table. He takes the jar Tongfan holds out to him.
Ah? You say that as if your sister cannot and will not drink me under the table,
Pei Huai says dubiously, as Tongfan sits down opposite him. Without another word, Tang Yu fetches two bowls and sets them down in front of them. Then she kisses Tongfan on the top of his head.
I will leave you to it for tonight.
She kisses Pei Huai's head as well.
Your mother is expecting me early tomorrow.
Pei Huai watches her leave, then watches the door for long moments after she's gone. Tongfan pointedly doesn't comment on it, pouring them each a bowl of wine. They toast each other, then Tongfan closes his eyes and tips the whole bowl down his throat. When he opens them again, Pei Huai is watching him, having taken a much smaller mouthful.
So, just how much of that conversation did you hear? He asks.
Brutal. Tongfan pours another bowl, makes himself drink more slowly, this time as his gaze roams around the room.
What conversation?
Pei Huai sighs, downs the rest of his bowl.
A merchant colleague brought me a fascinating plant from the West last month. He starts,
and they spend the next few hours drinking and discussing remedies, old and new, the latest palace gossip, which could, of course, be invaluable in Tongfan's next case, and their plans for returning to the capital after the wedding. The strange sense Tongfan had felt while eavesdropping of being on unstable ground has long since washed away, turning instead to pique when he takes advantage of the lull in conversation.
You know, Lao Pei, Tongfan says, I have published more than 30 spring books. I am an expert in matters of love.
Pei Huai raises his eyebrows, then leans across the table, as if to divulge a secret. Tongfan leans in to meet him.
You know, Tongfan, he says, I have treated countless female patients, but I could never say I was an expert in matters of love until I met your sister.
Lao Pei,
Tongfan draws out the name, slumps face first on the table.
The capital's leading gynecologist isn't allowed to talk about my sister.
Pei Huai pats his shoulder, as if in sympathy.
I'm just saying, Tongfan, there is theory and then there is practice.
And what makes you think I have not had practice?
Tongfan props his chin on the table to look up at him, pouting.
Ah, Tongfan.
Pei Huai pats him on the head, and Tongfan scowls and jerks up to sitting again.
You are a pure theorist. This is what makes you so good at investigating crime. You are able to construct abstract scenarios in your mind and see them through to their logical conclusion.
Tongfan isn't sure whether he should be flattered by what Pei Huai is saying or insulted by what he's inferring. No. He shouldn't be insulted. There is no shame in having no experience of a carnal or romantic nature. And remaining unmarried is as appealing as it's always been. With a wife, his attention would be split between home and work, and with Sui Zhou keeping him fed and housed, there was no need anyway. Besides, he doubts there is a woman in China who is a better cook than Sui Zhou. His face feels hot,
and Pei Huai is watching him with a smirk. Tong Fan hides his inexplicable blush by lifting the bowl to his lips again. Pei Huai sighs and places his hand on the table between them, as if in a gesture of conciliation.
Run Qing, why do you want Sui Zhou to get married? You hated it when the Empress Dowager tried to match him with Yu Julian.
Tong Fan frowns at him for such a foolish question. It doesn't matter if I want him to get married or not. He's from a noble family. He's going to get married. And I hated it because it was so heartless. No one should be forced to marry someone they do not love.
Pei Huai gives a half smile, then looks down at his hand on the table instead of meeting Tong Fan's eyes.
When you picture Sui Zhou married, where do you see yourself?
Tong Fan's breath catches without his permission. His hand reaches for the wine jar, but Pei Huai beats him to it and snatches it out of reach.
Run Qing, I know you are not as drunk as you are pretending to be. Where do you see yourself? He demands, not deterred in the slightest by Tong Fan's scowl.
Still mending his clothes, demanding he cook your favorites every night? Will you live with them?
I'll pay.
Tong Fan whines. He has had too much wine. He feels sick.
Tong Fan.
Pei Huai sighs heavily, sitting up straight on his stool again and wiping his hand over his face. Begrudgingly, he pours Tong Fan another bowl, and Tong Fan lingers over it, keeping it held to his mouth with both hands. He can't meet Pei Huai's eyes over the rim. His heart is pounding too hard, his gut churning. When he finally has to set it down, he darts a measuring glance at Pei Huai. The doctor is watching him with narrowed eyes, a look Tong Fan recognizes from him working through a complex diagnosis.
What do you think of him?
Pei Huai asks plainly, and Tong Fan wilts under the continued interrogation.
Lao Pei, you are getting married in 2 days. Why must you fixate on my life so ruthlessly?
Tong Fan, think of it as a case. Indulge me. Tong Fan throws his hands into the air and shakes his head.
I think he is loyal, intelligent, not the most intelligent, but enough for his rank. Strong, handsome, it's obvious. He is a kung fu master, after all. And he is an excellent chef.
And how do you feel when you think of him?
Tong Fan frowns at Pei Huai, fishes for an appropriate answer.
Hungry?
Ha! Pei Huai shakes his head in disbelief.
Lao Pei,
Tong Fan lays both hands on the table. I was the number one scholar of Hanlin Academy in the 13th year of the Chenghua reign. I am not so stupid as to misunderstand the nature of your questioning. What is Guang Chuan to me? He is my Shongdi, my dearest friend.
He swallows.
I don't know why you and Jia are so obsessed with picking apart my recognition of what is simply reality. With any luck, Sui Zhou and the future Sui Furen will allow me to rent a room in their house. If not, it doesn't matter. My salary can afford me a room somewhere else.
Pei Huai stares at him silently. The wine jar is empty, so Tong Fan stands, swaying slightly before steadying.
The cold air outside will sober him the rest of the way up. Good night, Lao Pei.
Pei Huai rises to clap him on the shoulder before he leaves, his smile rueful.
Good night, Tong Fan.
Sui Zhou doesn't arrive when he's meant to. Every creak of the gate, every sweep of teal fabric in the corner of his eye, has Tong Fan's head turning to check. But dinner is served, and Sui Zhou still hasn't joined them.
Deng Er's head is bowed as they eat, even while Cheng Er continues to chatter away, and the smile she gives Tong Fan when he places more tofu in her bowl is weak.
There, Mei Mei,
Tong Yu says to her as they say goodnight for the evening in the courtyard, pulling Deng Er into an embrace.
I'm sure he's just been held up by a case.
She meets Tong Fan's eyes over Deng Er's head and smiles sympathetically.
He was bringing me more osmanthus cakes, Dungar cries. They're my favorite. And I'm sure he still will. He's likely on his way right now.
Tong Fan agrees. Probably camping rough in the woods. You know how he is.
Dungar pulls away from Tong Yu and drags the back of her hand over her nose.
Dungar, he will be here for the wedding.
She nods and turns to walk towards her room, shoulders drooping.
Run Qing, are you all right?
Tong Fan gives his sister a curious smile.
Of course I am, Jia. See you tomorrow?
Of course, she echoes and grasps his hand, squeezing it briefly. Good night.
Good night.
He lies awake for what feels like hours, listening to the creak-creak of the frogs in the rice paddies and the cries of the owls hunting them. His mind is turning thoughts over and over, like softened river stones, like words for a new novel. He isn't aware of having fallen asleep, but startles awake abruptly, eyes blinking in confusion at the dark, taking a moment to remember where he is.
Run Qing, are you awake? It's me.
Tong Fan squeezes his eyes shut, lifts his hand to rub the sleep from them, and finds his arm restricted by a gentle weight. A moment later, it's gone. Sui Zhou removes his hand from Tong Fan's arm and smiles faintly at him. Face mostly in shadow.
Guang Chuan?
Tong Fan croaks, voice rough from sleep.
Sorry for waking you. I wanted to let you know I had arrived.
It's so late now.
For all that Tong Fan had felt that sleep would never find him, now he feels swaddled by it, his mind slow to catch up with what's happening.
Did you bring Dongar's Admanthus cakes?
Sui Zhou shifts. Tong Fan sees his shadowy body rise from his crouch by Tong Fan's bed and move away, and the warm orange light of a lantern faintly illuminates the room. Sui Zhou returns with a bundle of paper-wrapped parcels and sits on the edge of the bed by Tong Fan's hip, unwrapping one of the parcels. He holds it out to Tong Fan. Tong Fan struggles up from under his blankets to sit up, reaching for a cake before he's even halfway there and taking a blissful bite.
Why aren't you sleeping in the woods?
He asks, around a mouthful. Sui Zhou's smile is stronger this time.
I didn't want to wait.
You missed dinner.
I ate on the road.
Tong Fan makes a face.
But where will you sleep? No one is awake.
The night porter let me in,
Sui Zhou reassures.
He's preparing a room now. He told me where you were.
Oh.
Tong Fan swallows the last crumbs of the cake. He feels a little more awake now, but still. He rubs his face sleepily, hiding his gaze behind his hands as he watches Sui Zhou's reaction to his words.
You could have laid your bedroll out and slept on the floor in here.
Sui Zhou laughs under his breath, warm.
This humble guard thanks you for your generous offer.
He returns, holding his hands together in a roughly sketched bow. Tong Fan feels that warmth in his chest, even as something like a fluttering disappointment curls around it. Still, despite the teasing, Sui Zhou doesn't get up from his seat on the bed.
How are the wedding preparations going?
As expected. Dongar hung up all our robes as soon as we got here. She's excited about dressing up. Sui Zhou had taken both of them to a tailor, and all three of them had come away with fine new clothes for the occasion. She will be happy to see you. Sui Zhou's searching gaze roams over Tong Fan's face for a moment, the dim light of the room making his eyes seem darker than usual. His hair is soft against his shoulders.
We are yet to receive a reply from Wang She.
Tong Fan blinks. Is there any other news? From He Tao? Sui Zhou shakes his head.
No news is good news.
Dongar will be disappointed. Sui Zhou smiles again. There's a light knock at the door, and he stands abruptly.
Darren, your room is ready.
comes the voice of the night porter. Okay, Sui Zhou calls out in acknowledgement, just loud enough to carry, then efficiently rewraps the cakes. He pauses before leaving, looking down at Tang Fan for a moment. Tang Fan finds his eyes roving over Sui Zhou's face, his body, like he's starving, hasn't eaten for days. Tang Fan blinks rapidly. It is good to see him. I'll see you tomorrow, Sui Zhou says, mouth curling wryly, and pads out on silent feet. On the day of the wedding, Tang Yu and Pei Huai are whisked away to prepare, leaving Tang Fang, Dong Ar, and Sui Zhou to get ready by themselves before the ceremonies begin. Wu Yun appears midway through, when they're dressed but not quite ready, Dong Ar fussing over her hair in front of the mirror. Sui Zhou has braided and re-braided it, but Dong Ar remains unsatisfied. She seems oddly close to tears when Wu Yin taps on the door and enters, and he blinks in surprise when she cries his name and runs to him, wrapping her arms around his waist. Even though she's grown so much in the past few years, she still looks small next to him. Will you braid my hair? She asks, gazing up at him with damp eyes. Like Dwarla Jia's? Tang Fan can't breathe for a moment, frown feeling heavy on his face. And when he looks over, Sui Zhou has stepped back and is staring at the floor.
Dong Ar,
Wu Yin says gruffly, pushing her gently back by the shoulders and guiding her to a stool.
Hand me those ribbons.
Watching Wu Yin's broad, calloused hands move expertly through Dong Ar's hair, Tang Fan remembers sitting in Dwarla's home with Qingge, the two of them sharing gentle, caring touches, admiring each other, caring for each other. It's unfair that all the women in Dong Ar's life have been taken away from her. Perhaps now, with Tang Yu marrying, her feelings of loss have trebled. There's a touch at his elbow. Sui Zhou is at his side, and Tang Fan reads his own thoughts on his friend's face. But the moment passes, and Sui Zhou is blinking, an odd expression on his features as he rubs his nose.
Runqing, can I...
Tang Fan watches as he picks something up from the table, a lacquered box that he opens carefully for Tang Fan to see inside. It's a hairpiece, polished silver, the ring crafted as if braided from cords, a thread of gold woven through it, and the pin a stylized arrow. You, Tang Fan begins, confused. It's rare that he's at a loss for words, and his mind scrambles to interpret the situation. You need help putting it on? Sui Zhou huffs, shoulders dropping for a moment.
Sui Daga wants to put it on you,
Dong Ar interjects. And Tang Fan looks at her, only to look quickly away again, avoiding Wu Yin's heavy gaze.
Guangchuan Xiang, where did this come from? I don't remember buying it when we bought our wedding clothes.
Tang Fan doesn't quite know what to do with his hands, wringing them in front of him. Sui Zhou takes a deep breath, then sighs.
Sit, please.
He gestures Tang Fan towards another stool, and Tang Fan finds himself dropping down onto it heavily. Sui Zhou's hands and his hair make his scalp prickle. Tang Fan stares at the feet of Dong Ar's stool for a long moment, without seeing them, feeling Sui Zhou making small adjustments to the bun Tang Fan had already tied atop his head, then secure the hair piece in place. It creates a gentle tugging sensation, and Tang Fan's chest seizes. He can't breathe for a moment.
There,
Sui Zhou says at last, and there's a ghost of a touch down the hair that spills down Tang Fan's back. The sensation spreads over his body like hot water. Silk rustles as Sui Zhou steps away, and Tang Fan swallows, mouth dry, before bouncing to his feet.
Guangchuan, it's very nice,
Tang Fan says when he can speak again. He hasn't turned around to face Sui Zhou, but accidentally catches his eyes in the bronze mirror as he examines his reflection.
Gifts are supposed to be for the bride and groom, though. How can it be a gift when he already buys you everything?
Tong Fan grits his teeth against the urge to shake Deng Ar. Luckily, Wu Yin interrupts.
All finished, little girl.
He steps back, and Deng Ar rushes to the mirror, looking at herself eagerly for a moment before bursting into tears.
Wu Yin looks horrified. Deng Ar.
I love it. Deng Ar wails. Tong Fan looks at Cui Zhou helplessly, who shrugs, seeming just as at a loss. There's another soft tap on the door, and a woman's voice calls out,
Is Ah Dong here?
Tong Fan yanks the door open with relief. It's Pei Huai's sister-in-law, Su Qing, dressed prettily with a perfectly painted face. With a heaving gulp, Deng Ar swallows her tears down and stares at her with wide eyes.
Su Gunyang? Would Deng Ar like some help with her makeup?
Deng Ar nods, and Su Qing guides her out of the room. The three of them remaining let out matching sighs of relief. Cui Zhou is dressed in silk, the blue of an ocean storm, spiderweb fine embroidery embellishing his shoulders. Black leather is cinched at his waist, and a silver hairpiece gleams in his dark hair. Standing in the dim winter sun, he makes the dark stone courtyard look washed out and lifeless. Tong Fan brushes his own robes down nervously. White is inappropriate for a wedding, so he had chosen an ivory tinted faintly with gold, with yellow embroidery emphasizing the warmth. He doesn't think he's ever worn anything so fine, and he's not so stupid as to not recognize that the hairpiece Cui Zhou gave him matches it perfectly. Tong Fan blinks as Deng Ar runs to them in her sky-blue robes, lips bright. She strikes a pose in front of them and giggles in delight when Cui Zhou gives her a formal bow.
Deng Gunyang is beautiful.
The rest of the day is filled with laughter, warmth, and ease, in the way that Tang Yu's first wedding never was. Tong Fan feels himself on the verge of tears all day and can't quite figure out why. Mostly, he scolds the feeling down, as though it's a fractious child. His face hurts from smiling as Lao Pei serves him tea, and Tong Yu looks more beautiful than he's ever seen her. Tong Fan, Cui Zhou, Wu Yin, and Deng Ar sit together at Tong Yu's family table for the feast. And though the wine flows freely, Tong Fan tries to keep away from it. Perhaps he can avoid any more unnecessary and awkward conversations by remaining sober this time. After the first time Tong Fan covers his cup in response to the wine decanter, Cui Zhou keeps his teacup filled, and Tong Fan makes sure to let him know in detail how much more superior his dishes are to the ones they are currently consuming. Cui Zhou just raises an eyebrow at Tong Fan's piled high plate. Tong Fan swallows hastily. Guang Chuan, just because I am enjoying this food, it does not mean I would not enjoy yours immensely more. Mmm, Deng Ar agrees around a mouthful. The first time Tang Daga ate Sui Daga's noodles at home, he cried, she informs Wu Yun, who seems to take this information with amusement, if not surprise. Tong Fan huffs. It's not a character flaw to enjoy good food, he rebuffs. Cui Zhou's eyes are warm in the lamplight. He puts another piece of meat on Tong Fan's plate.
There are more cakes in my room. You can have them later if you're still hungry.
Tong Fan puts the meat in his mouth and savors it, sweet with glaze. He smiles, feeling his cheeks push his eyes into crescents. Sui Guang Chuan is my best Xiangdi, he declares. And Cui Zhou smiles back.